I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Seattle's newest socialist darling has been exposed as a Nepo baby who can't even say for sure how much money her parents give her. Plus, local media outlets freak out at immigration agents using a readily available camera system. Plus, I was right, Democrats are already using their Trump bad playbook against J.D. Vance. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Why does it always turn out this way? You've got someone who's a socialist darling, a champion of the working class, and it turns out they're a total fraud and Nepo baby who's really never put in a hard day's work in their entire life and just coasts off their parents' coattails. So you already have Mamdani in New York, and apparently we literally do have a mini Mamdani in Seattle who's probably going to be the city's next mayor, and she'll be propelled there by all of these woke progressive voters who think she's a champion for the working class, but she has no idea what it's like to struggle. So this is, I mean, it's kind of glorious because it's so crazy how these Seattle voters are duped. But of course, the election coming up in a couple weeks, Mayor Bruce Harrell, the current mayor of the city of Seattle, is in the fight of his life to keep his job. He did not perform well in the primary, and he was beaten by like 10 percentage points by Katie Wilson, who no one really knew before the primary. I'm like, who? And she absolutely gave him a drumming in the primary. And so, you know, I guess if nothing changes, I think it's hard to come back from a 10 percentage point defeat in the primary. So right now, she's the front runner, which, and I've said, I don't think Bruce is doing a particularly good job, but at the same time, he's much less bad for the city of Seattle than Katie Wilson would be. She's absolutely a socialist. She's going to continue to push all of these policies that are going to be bad for the economy, bad for businesses and all this stuff. So even though I don't think Bruce Harrell has done a particularly good job, we kind of need him to stay in office. But that doesn't look like that's the way things are going, unless more people read this KUOW story that just dropped yesterday and understand how ill-suited and inexperienced Katie Wilson is. So this is the headline from KUOW. And keep in mind that KUOW is left wing. So the fact that KUOW is pointing out some of these problems with Katie Wilson and some of the hypocrisy with Katie Wilson, I think is quite interesting. Headline, Katie Wilson can barely afford to live in Seattle. That's why she wants to be mayor. Okay. She can't afford to live here, barely. Struggle. It is such a struggle to live in Seattle. It is so expensive. So that's why she wants to be the mayor. She wants to help people who are just like her, who are struggling to live in the city they love. Or so that's, you know, the narrative that she puts out there. Here's what KUOW said about what Wilson is really like. Wilson, 43, the populist candidate for Seattle mayor, wears basic button-ups from Goodwill and her hair pulled back in a low bun. She comes off as reserved, happiest when she's discussing policy. Wilson stands in stark contrast to incumbent Mayor Bruce Harrell, 67, a charming showman in a crisp suit who has his personal story on speed dial. Wilson presents herself as a sensible coalition builder who runs a small nonprofit, the Transit Riders Union, and has lived a mostly working class life. A renter and a mother, she runs on issues close to her heart. She speaks the language of struggling people. Except, as KUOW discovered, there's quite a problem with Katie Wilson's public persona. It is a complete charade. It is completely manufactured. Here's what they wrote. Not included in the narrative Wilson tells on the campaign trail is how she affords living in this expensive city. The answer is simple, and arguably very Seattle. Her parents, professors in New York State, give her money. Quote, they send me a check periodically to help with the childcare expenses, she said, adding that daycare for her toddler costs around $2,200 a month. She did not say precisely how much her parents contribute, noting that she does not keep track. When pressed, she said money arrives every couple months. Oh, it gets worse than that. Wilson doesn't have a college degree, so she worked a number of odd jobs. Why doesn't she have a college degree, though? It's weird. Her parents are professors or academics in New York State. Well, she did attend Oxford University in England, but dropped out 6 weeks before graduation, debt-free thanks to her parents. But when she arrived in Seattle in 2004, she said she cut herself off from her parents' money as she took some distance from the ivory tower world she came from. You guys, I need you to grasp this for a second. This is a socialist who's out there talking about and speaking the language of the working class, presents herself as just some frumpy mom who buys her clothes at Goodwill and doesn't care a lot about material things, doesn't even have a college degree, you know, in Seattle, work jobs here and there, and just has a small nonprofit, the Transit Riders Union. She gets periodic checks from her rich parents, doesn't or wouldn't, like can't or won't, say how much money her parents give her, and talks about not even having a college degree because she went to Oxford University in England, fully paid by her parents, and cared so little about seeing that through that she dropped out 6 weeks before she was set to graduate. Can you even understand the amount of privilege that that takes? And I'm fine with privilege. You know that. I have no issue with somebody who comes from a rich family wanting to be in politics. But of course, the problem is with how she presents herself. And the problem is with how she's duped working class people into believing that she's going to be their champion. Her parents spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on her education just for her to drop out 6 weeks before graduation and go out and embark on a trip of the world to pursue woke causes and an agenda. Goes on to say, it says, Wilson said her husband dreamed of starting a home bakery, but put that idea on hold so she could focus on the campaign. For now, he doesn't have a paying job. Okay, just a second here. So her parents are giving her money to help, and she won't say how much, to help her live in Seattle and afford childcare. Her husband doesn't even have a job. Well, he probably doesn't need to, because her rich parents send her a lot of money. The checks from Wilson's parents cover most of the cost of childcare for their 2-year-old daughter, Josie. Wilson and her husband pay roughly another $2,200 in rent each month for their one-bedroom apartment on Capitol Hill. Wilson says she is not ashamed about the help they get. Quote, it just speaks to how expensive and unaffordable it is, right? If you're lucky enough to have parents who can pitch in a little bit, that's not something to be embarrassed about. And I agree, well, to a certain extent. I think in your 40s, when you're running a campaign to be mayor, and your husband doesn't even have a job, yeah, getting help from your parents is a little bit embarrassing. But the most embarrassing part of it is you presenting yourself as a champion of the working class. This woman lived in New York, grew up in New York State. That's where her parents are professors, again, Oxford University. And she decided, her and her guy, they just basically got in the car one day to see what area of the country tickled their fancy. And they just drove into Seattle and decided they'd try Seattle out. And in the course of, you know, a pretty short period of time, this Nepo baby from the East Coast, who dropped out of Oxford debt-free 6 weeks before graduation, has a huge chunk of Seattle's electorate believing that she's a champion for the working class. It's even worse than Mamdani, I've got to be honest. So if you're not familiar with Mamdani's background, this is a New York Post story. Zohran Mamdani has barely ever had a job, with just 3 years in the workforce, including his rap career and a gig for his mom. Yeah, this guy who's going to be in charge, likely, of the nation's largest city, has quite literally never had a real job. He worked for his mommy, and then he tried to be a rapper for a couple years. In his whole life, he's had 3 years of employment, and I would consider that very loose employment. And now he wants to be in charge of the nation's larger city. And of course, he lives off money from his parents. So we have two of the largest cities in America that are very likely going to vote for socialists to lead their cities, where a bunch of voters have been duped into believing that these are champions of the working class when they really have no idea what it's like to be a member of the working class. I mean, Katie Wilson is like a member of the working class, like as a performative thing. Like she says, when she came back to Seattle after Oxford, she cut her parents off. What is that quote again? Hold on a second. She cut herself off from her parents' money as she took some distance from the ivory tower world she came from. Wow, how nice. She cut herself off. Well, clearly not for very long, because now she survives thanks to her parents' money. So just as an act of performance, she cut herself off so she could see what life is like in the real world. It's really wild stuff. And I've got to say, there's this really stunning aspect. And I hate to insult voters, right? I never want to insult voters. I think there are a lot of voters who can see through things like this and who are willing to do their due diligence. But you have to understand, like, the people who are going to elect Katie Wilson are the woke white progressives in Seattle, which make up a pretty big chunk of the electorate, right? So these are people who we're supposed to believe value struggle, right? Value BIPOC communities, value immigrant communities, you know, all these things that progressives lift up as being very important to their value structure and thus important in the people who they vote for. But let's just take a side-by-side look and comparison of the two candidates here who they're going to be deciding between, Bruce Harrell and Katie Wilson. So I just told you all about Katie Wilson. Nepotism baby, the child of two East Coast New York academics, went to Oxford University on her parents' dime. Her husband doesn't even have a job, doesn't need one because her parents pay for childcare. On the other side, you have Bruce Harrell. Bruce's dad is black, his mom's Japanese. His dad moved to Seattle to flee Jim Crow in the South. His mom and her family were interned during World War II. At the time, his mom's family had their property and small business on Capitol Hill seized by the government. They had to rebuild from nothing. They lived in a red line area when Bruce was growing up of Seattle, and he is truly a son of Seattle. He went to Garfield High School, as you know. He played football at the University of Washington, stayed here, built a career here, raised a family here. His dad was a lifelong City Light employee. His mom was a librarian, truly working class roots. Now, which of those two do the progressives support? I mean, really think about that. Bruce Harrell, the son of someone who fled Jim Crow in the South, the son of someone whose Japanese family was interned during World War II, redlined in Seattle, had property and businesses taken from them, struggled, rebuilt, scratched. Dad worked at City Light, mom's a librarian. Son of Seattle, raised here, stayed here, signed up to serve his city. Versus a nepotism baby, white girl in her 40s who gets money from mommy and daddy and dropped out of Oxford University with six weeks left because she could and wasn't going to have any debt anyway. Who do you think people are painting as a champion of the working class in Seattle? A champion of progressivism. A champion of the woke ideology that they pretend to care about. How do you even justify that? And she's going to win, by the way. She's going to win. Someone who's hardly had any life experiences that could be classified as a struggle has somehow become the candidate of those who struggle. And the same with Mamdani in New York. How do they dupe so many people? How do they dupe so many people into believing that they can represent them is really beyond me. It did make me laugh, though, about this article I saw earlier this week from CNBC that I was sort of mortified at when I originally saw it, because I just thought there's no way. But when you got people like Katie Wilson out there, I guess there is a way. It was from CNBC. Parents are covering $1,474 monthly for their adult kids. That it says that parents are spending money helping their adult children buy groceries, cell phones, and even vacations. Vacations. Well, I guess that doesn't surprise me very much. Katie Wilson's parents are supporting her while she runs for mayor, and her husband doesn't even have a job. He wanted to start a bakery, but he's not. He's going to hold off on that while his wife is on the campaign trail. Yeah, it's just insane. Now, again, I don't care. I love rich people. Rich people are great. I want to personally in this life get as rich as I can. I mean, right? It's the facade, though. I didn't come from money. Now, I had a mom that raised four kids virtually on her own because my dad was a drug-addicted alcoholic. But I've also been able to move on and do very well for myself. But, you know, I've been there. I know what it's like to not be able to afford gasoline. I know what it's like to be late on your rent and all these things. So, you know, I can speak to that. Bruce can speak to that. He has three generations of his family who can speak to how hard it is in the city of Seattle to get by. But Seattle voters are going to vote for this, like, white, dumpy-looking woman who's the child of academics on the East Coast. Has never struggled a day in her life. It's really crazy. I don't know. I don't know how to convince people to wake up. All right, coming up next, we have a couple bizarre stories that I want to get to. But the local media is freaking out that ICE used a license plate reading system to help them, even though it was available for them to use, and it was perfectly fine until the media started freaking out about it. I have told you guys to reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. If you're thinking about selling your home, Wes and his team have been doing this for a really long time in our area, and they know what it takes to sell your home in this current environment. So one of those things is you need to make sure your home is properly prepared for listing. That might mean just staging, but it might also mean that you need to make some cosmetic upgrades to your home. So sellwithwes.com, start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then from there, ask Wes and his team for a free market analysis. They'll tell you how homes are performing in your neighborhood, in your area, and it'll give you a good idea of kind of where your home is going to be priced, the strategy behind it, and all of that. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really is a better way to sell your home. All right. So this is an old article from King 5 News, but I think it's important to set this story back up, where King 5 News was talking about the success of a camera system that the Auburn Police Department had installed to be able to help them fight crime. So this was back in August, and it celebrated this new system. Auburn's license plate reading camera is already a huge help to detectives, police say. The department installed 20 cameras built by Flock Safety to help solve and reduce crime. So just in August, they're like, this is such a great system to help us fight crime in an area of the state, frankly, that does have quite a bit of crime issues. So just got done celebrating it. Well, we can't celebrate it anymore. In fact, we have to get rid of it. Why? Well, it turned out that Immigration and Customs Enforcement was using the footage from this camera system to also help them fight crime. A couple of the headlines yesterday after a UW study announced that the feds had been accessing the data from this system. Como News. UW report finds police unknowingly shared license plate data with Border Patrol. UW report states federal immigration agencies accessing WA police cameras. City of Auburn condemns U.S. Border Patrol's unauthorized use of Flock. Well, I guess the Border Patrol, not ICE necessarily. City of Auburn condemns U.S. Border Patrol's unauthorized use of Flock camera system. Federal immigration authorities accessed Washington State license plate readers, report finds, blah, blah, blah. So they're all like, oh my God, can you believe this? The Border Patrol was accessing these crime cameras in Auburn. Yeah, it's because they were able to access the crime cameras in Auburn This was a shared system where law enforcement agencies around the country were able to share the data and use the information in collective crime fighting. There was never a prohibition on Border Patrol or federal agents using this. In fact, had it been installed a while ago, I guarantee they would have been used under the Biden administration as well. This is from the Auburn Examiner. The city of Auburn and its police department said this week that they did not knowingly allow federal immigration enforcement agencies to access the city's Flock camera system following a report that U.S. Border Patrol had gained entry through a national data sharing feature. According to Auburn officials, the access occurred through Flock's national lookup tool, which allows agencies across the country to share license plate data. The city said it immediately turned off the feature once it became aware that it could have allowed unintended federal access. So as part of having this Flock system, the company that makes the cameras, there's a national feature where other law enforcement agencies, not only in Washington state, but across the country, can get into the database and can utilize the cameras for their criminal investigations. And as King 5 reported back in August, this has been very successful in helping fight crime. And thus, you know, would be very successful for any agency that's able to access it to help fight crime. But because Border Patrol used it a couple times, they're turning it off. So even though they acknowledge it's a very, very helpful tool to fight crime, of course, in this political environment, can't let the feds fight crime. So we're going to turn it off and we're not going to be sharing video footage anymore. Nope, we're not going to use this to help anyone else fight crime. Because the media freaks out and the left freaks out and UW does a study saying, oh, the Border Patrol is accessing these cameras that were part of a national database. So everyone should have known that the Border Patrol could access those cameras. But apparently it's the Border Patrol's fault and it's ICE's fault for using a publicly available system. It's really quite wild. All right, let's get to our first dose of unbelievable, shall we, Nicole? Is that all right? I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. Go ahead. Boop! This is an insane story. Absolutely insane. I don't even know where to begin. It involves a severed finger, though. So if you're queasy, I'm not going to show the severed finger. We won't show. I don't even have a picture of the severed finger, in fact. So this is from Fox 13. Washington mother sues Edmonds School District for son's severed fingertip. Okay. Well, look, maybe just an accident happened. Kids play at school, you know, going down a slide, maybe gets a finger caught, severs the finger. That's surely what happened, right? Oh no, an unhinged teacher allegedly severed this kid's finger. Oh my gosh. So it says, according to the complaint, the incident happened in April 2023 at Cedar Way Elementary. The fourth grader became overwhelmed during class and tried to leave the room. Instead of de-escalating the situation, the lawsuit alleges his teacher, quote, forcefully pulled the door shut, severing the tip of his right middle finger. Attorney Chris Davis with Davis Law Group represented the family and said, quote, he has his own individual education plan, and that plan required a paraeducator to help him at all times while he was in the classroom. She leaves the classroom and the boy follows her and tries to plead with her not to leave. She doesn't stop and she slams the door on his finger and that severs the boy's finger. So this is a kid and he's got an IEP, which if you're not familiar, it's like needs a little extra help at school, right? Kind of like a special education situation. And so he's overwhelmed during class, has obviously some behavioral sort of issues he's working through. And the teacher just decides to get up and leave. And he follows her to the door, begging her, a little fourth grader, like, please don't leave. And she slams the door shut, allegedly, according to the lawsuit, on his poor little middle finger. And she severs it. Okay, it gets worse. When the child was asked what happened, documents state he said, quote, I was screaming at the top of my lungs. You could hear me probably three classrooms away, probably from the office. You could hear me screaming. I lost my voice. The teacher was just standing there. I banged on the window to tell her my finger. When I was screaming, all she did is look at me through the window. And then she walked away, I think, to go eat her lunch. She didn't open the door. I had to open the door myself. I don't feel safe. I don't like being in that classroom. So he's screaming, he says, from the top of his lungs, "My finger." And she looks at him through the window, allegedly, turns around and walks away to go eat her lunch. The mother claims the school called to tell her there had been an accident, but never explained the severity. When she arrived, she found her son covered in blood. Quote, "The school never informed mom what happened or why it had happened. She was promised a phone call by the principal that never materialized. She was just told to pick up her boy. And when she goes to the school to pick him up, he's got blood all over his shirt, and they hand her a cup with his severed fingertip." You guys. So mom, allegedly, in this lawsuit, says she gets a call. "Oh, something happened at school. You got to come pick your son up." She gets there. Her son's sitting there, all bloody. And she gets handed a cup with his fingertip in it. A fourth grader. And mind you, maybe I watch too many movies, but isn't time sort of the essence when you lose a finger? Like, don't you need to put that on ice and immediately get yourself to a hospital so they can maybe reattach it? No, they just sat the kid, fourth grader, with blood all over him. Like, and also a kid that has learning disabilities, right? Sits him in there, blood all over him, with his severed finger in a cup. "Come get him, mom." Just answer. I hate to laugh. I really do. But I just feel like this is just exhibit A, B, C, D, E, and F as to why just homeschool your kids. This woman, I mean, that's a mortifying situation. If the story that the kid and the mom are sharing is true, that if you're a teacher tasked with especially helping kids who have an IEP, an individualized learning plan, and they need a little extra help and a little extra care, and sometimes they have behavioral issues, you ought to have the ability in a moment, even if it's high stress, where a kid's getting very frustrated, to be able to de-escalate, to work with them. I mean, that's literally what you're paid for. It's a specialty position. And instead, you just can't handle it. So you walk away, slam his hand in the door, sever his finger, see him screaming in agony, and go eat your lunch. And then the school hands the mom a cup with the kid's severed finger in it and says, "Good luck." I mean, what do you think in this case? I don't like to be overly litigious. And after all, this is a school district lawsuit. And so it's taxpayer funds that are going to pay this out. What is this worth for the family? I think that's a $20 million lawsuit.
That's the end of the middle finger.
I don't think that I would accept anything under $20 million.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
I didn't get a show poll out today because I did an appearance on Liz Wheeler before the show. Maybe that should have been our show poll. Is how much should that family get from the school district for the pain and suffering and emotional damage and distress? That's just an unreal story. We'll do a double dose of unbelievable coming up next. Crazy. First, reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing, newest sponsors here on the show, especially if you're a homeowner and you know that you need a new roof, or maybe you've got a leak that's happening right now. Well, call Valentine 206 Roofing and they'll come out and they'll do, first of all, leak repair. But they'll also do an assessment of your roof. And maybe you don't need a new roof. Maybe it really just is a leak that could be patched up. But if you know that your roof is nearing the end of its life, I know homeowners just sort of dread that. It's one of the biggest, most costly repairs you can do for your home. But the nice thing is with Valentine Roofing, first of all, they do zero down financing for most projects. You can get the work done now, pay over time. And they're not going to push you into a new roof if you don't need one. So, you know, if you read the reviews of them, they're very honest about the way that they go about this. And they don't just do new roofs, by the way. If you need new siding, gutters, attic insulation, exterior cleaning, you can expect the same great, honest service from them. So schedule your free estimate by calling 206 Roofing. Again, 206 Roofing, and please tell them you heard about them on Undivided. And that's what I was saying. I need to call them to do the exterior cleaning because I love my sweet husband, but I got him a pressure washer from Costco and he acted like it was the best gift he'd ever gotten. And he was going to use it all the time. How often do you think he's used that to pressure wash the outside of our house and our deck? Like once, okay? So I give up. I'm going to call Valentine Roofing. 206 Roofing. Love you, husband. Love you. You work too much, though. 206 Roofing. All right. Let's see here. Oh, Nicole put a reminder in here for me of that last story that probably a good reason why you should sign the initiatives to strengthen communication between schools and parents. So I don't know, maybe you have better communication when you, one of your teachers severs a kid's finger. So tip. Like, so I think we should write that into the initiative.
Or call for medical help and tell the parent you're calling for medical help. Instead of just saying, hey, when you get a chance, there was an incident.
Yeah, come on in. We'll give your kid's finger in a cup.
See what you're walking into when you walk into a bloody horror scene.
Let's get those Let's Go Washington Initiative signs. I hate to laugh, but it just is so ridiculous.
It's crazy.
It is. All right. Double dose today of Unbelievable. This is so, so insane. You couldn't write this into a... I could see this being like an episode of Law and Order or something like that. I mean, it really reads like a screenplay, but it's deeply disturbing. Seattle. Totally Seattle.
Very Seattle.
So there's a convicted felon who we talked about on the show. He was arrested for posing as a cop. And we didn't know the full details of it. I think we did it just sort of in passing because he was working as a security guard, but the uniform that he was wearing out absolutely had all the trappings of being a law enforcement officer. He even had a patch that said like SWAT on it. And he was presenting himself as a police officer. His name is Michael Scaletta, 49 years old. And so he had been accused, basically, it's from Jeremy Hamrose at Como News, of using a fake police uniform and fake police car to drive around to actual emergency calls in the city of Bremerton. And even several actual police officers said he fooled them at first, because I mean, he really was. He even had a little thing in his ear and everything. Totally
the
equipped.
The car is pretty convincing.
Yeah.
His car.
Oh, at first glance, even I would be like, oh, yeah, of course, mm-hmm. That's a real police officer, right? And he was also simultaneously had been working as a security guard. So now some more video and details have come out. And I want to give Como News and again, Jeremy Harris credit for this. So in one of the videos, and I think last time on the show, the video we played is of him being confronted by a real cop who's kind of suspicious. And they're going to make a phone call to, you know, the police agency he says he works for because he doesn't have his ID. He doesn't have his, like, credentials with him. And so they start to grow very suspicious of him. So the new video that comes out and the new allegations, though, are absolutely horrific about why. They shed light on why he was going around Bremerton pretending to be a police officer. So first, this is dash cam video. Once they finally arrested him, because they said, you're not a real cop. We know you're not a real cop. So they put him in the back of a real cop car. And the officer is speaking to him and says that he thinks he knows why this guy was pretending to be a law enforcement officer.
I just think I'm high.
I think you're high.
Okay. That's your opinion, man.
As a matter of fact, Mr. Scaletta, my theory is that this whole pretend to be a cop thing down in Salvation Army is a opportunity for you to seize drugs from the local transient people.
Man, that cop is smart. So the cop, they realize he's a fake cop, and he had been hanging around by the Salvation Army with this full cop uniform, fake cop car, pretending to be a police officer. And this officer who arrests him says, you know what? I think what you're doing is you're pretending to be a cop so you can go out and do seizures of drugs from homeless people, because the cop tells him, I think you're high right now. And you can see in the video, he does absolutely look like he's tripping balls on something, right? And so then Como News, great reporting. Once his story is out there in the news and his face is everywhere, people start calling in with tips about, oh, I had this interaction with him, or I had this interaction with him. And there is a horrifying video that has now surfaced.
Police say they were flooded with tips about Scaletta after his arrest was made public, including someone who provided them with this video that police say was recorded by Scaletta when he responded to a death in Seattle in June. Investigators say Scaletta instructed Seattle firefighters to stop their work and close the trunk of the car.
Oh my God. So I know it's very brief, but he's like responding in Seattle to a call. Can we play it one more time just so that can really sink in?
Police say they were flooded with tips about Scaletta after his arrest was made public, including someone who provided them with this video that police say was recorded by Scaletta when he responded to a death in Seattle in June. Investigators say Scaletta instructed Seattle firefighters to stop their work and close the trunk of the car.
So he's responding to a death. And it sounded like it was like an overdose situation. I don't know why they were in the trunk of a car, a little weird, but basically told Seattle firefighters, just close the door. And the thought is he was going to steal the person's drugs. So he's a druggie, convicted felon, who is going around using this fake cop uniform to just either take drugs off dead people or to take drugs off real or off living homeless people who he knows has drugs. Absolutely insane story. Credit to Como News for getting that video. Just wild stuff. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next. First, a lot happening globally. And so if you're concerned about your retirement portfolio, I've even been seeing these headlines that, oh, the conditions are there for like they were before the 1929 stock market crash. So if you're seeing those and it's freaking you out, I don't blame you. Get a second opinion with our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Zach will do a free risk assessment on your retirement portfolio. He'll share the basic fundamentals of value investing and give you a perspective on the outlook for the next few months, the remainder of 2025 and beyond. Plus, he'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So go to KnowYourRiskPodcast.com, KnowYourRiskPodcast.com, and just ask our friend Zach for a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. You only get one retirement. You do not want to risk it. And managing the risk associated with investing is very, very important. So KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. All right, I told you so. First of all, as we've discussed, I'm a genius, obviously. But I was saying on the show last week that, like, it doesn't matter who comes after President Trump. It doesn't matter. It could be Liz Cheney. It could be like a quote unquote rhino. It could be someone who's been a never Trumper. They will still, Democrats will still paint them as Trump 2.0. Because this is the strategy they've clung to. Donald Trump is the greatest scapegoat they've ever had in the history of time. They can blame everything on him and on Trumpism and MAGA and threat to democracy, and people will ignore all their failures. So they're not going to let go of that. They're not going to let go of that just when Trump leaves office. Whoever comes next, I said just last week, they are going to say that is Trump 2.0. And I even tweeted, this is a tweet from, I had to pull from October 13th. Democrats will stick to this playbook as long as their voters let them. They will use the same rhetoric and fear-mongering to describe the next Republican president, no matter who it is. Gosh, and my prediction came true even more quickly than I had imagined. Jen Psaki, the former White House press secretary under Biden, went on a podcast and said this.
The little Manchurian candidate, J.D. Vance, wants to be president more than anything else.
Yeah.
I always wonder what's going on in the mind of his wife. Like,
agree.
Are you okay? Please blink four times.
Yes.
We'll come over here. We'll save you. And that he's willing to do anything to get there. And that your whole iteration you just outlined, I mean, he's scarier in certain ways.
He's smarter.
In some ways. And he's young.
Play that one more time.
He's scarier in certain ways.
He's smarter.
In some ways. And he's young.
We're 3.5 years away. They're already doing it. They're already laying the groundwork. I mean, I just said it. And I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. And if it's not J.D. Vance, if it's someone else, they're going to do the exact same thing. It'll be Marco Rubio. It doesn't matter how many peace deals he helps the president broker. He's still going to be a threat to the world and to democracy. It literally does not matter what Republican. And at some point, I just have to ask Democratic voters, some of which I know watch this show, doesn't that bother you? Doesn't it bother you that everything the right does is an existential threat to our very existence? And like I've said with Trump and this whole No Kings movement over the weekend, like, okay, wake me up when he tries to become a dictator, because you've been saying that for 10 years. And what are they going to say? I mean, that the post I was just sharing from October 13th, I was responding to something Congressman Chris Murphy said when he said, we aren't on the verge of an authoritarian takeover. We're in the middle of it. This isn't the bumbling, directionless Trump from the first term. This time they are implementing a plan to let Trump and his people rule forever. So is anyone going to hold them accountable when President Trump leaves office in a couple years, as he left office the first time? So when he doesn't actually carry out this plan to rule forever, is the media actually going to call people like Chris Murphy back on their shows and say, hey, you were on here screaming from high heaven that Trump was never going to leave office. He was going to become a dictator. He was going to seize power, and it didn't happen. So do you want to apologize? Of course they're not going to. They're just going to roll it into, oh, he didn't have to leave power because he's appointed one of his minions, J.D. Vance or Marco Rubio or whoever it is. And he's going to carry on President Trump's legacy of working toward an authoritarian government. It's really so exhausting. And I just have to like wonder, don't you find that to be an insult to your intelligence? Where it's their warning about something happening for 10 years, 12 years, 13 years, 14 years that never actually happens. It's wild. All right. Meanwhile, the left is losing it over President Trump's destruction of the White House. Oh, yes. He is destroying the White House. I'm sure you've seen the images by now. So President Trump is building a ballroom. And it's like a $250 million price tag, but the taxpayers aren't paying for it. President Trump and some other donors are paying for the ballroom. And having been now to the White House, I do agree that it's shockingly small. It really is shockingly small. And yeah, I think if you're going to host world leaders, I don't care. Now, in this budgetary climate, if you were to build it with taxpayer funds, I would care. Let me make that very clear. If they were building this ballroom and taxpayers were going to have to foot the bill to it to the tune of $250 million, I would care and I wouldn't be in support of it. But they're paying for it. President Trump and others are paying for it. So it's like a free gift to America. Why are you so upset about it? But here's some of the posts. Hillary Clinton. Which the responses to Hillary Clinton, she turned off the responses. You can't comment on Hillary Clinton's posts unless she follows you. It's not his house. It's your house. And he's destroying it. Yeah, well, at least he hasn't defiled it like your husband did. And I also read, and I didn't know this, that apparently the Clintons like stole stuff from the White House. They took the silverware and they took some furniture. And this is like a well-known documented thing that they actually took stuff with them. Pramila Jayapal, $250 million spent on a new ballroom, $40 billion given to Argentina, $172 million for Kristi Noem's two private jets, $0 to lower your healthcare premiums. Working Americans are clearly not this administration's priority. Again, though, the $250 million is not coming from the taxpayers. Maria Shriver, this breaks my heart and it infuriates me. Hundreds of millions of dollars to build a new ballroom. Good God. And that was sort of the theme. David Axelrod, the image of the East Wing of the White House is a metaphor for a broader reckless destruction. The ballroom that will go up there will be a gaudy monument to vanity, corruption, and excess. For anyone who has worked at the White House or cares about its rich history, it is a gut punch. First of all, it's a subjective opinion to say that things that President Trump builds are gaudy. Yes, his interior decorating taste isn't everyone's, okay, gold toilets and all of that. So that's subjective. But for anyone who has worked at the White House or cares about its rich history, it's a gut punch in talking about it'll be a monument to vanity, corruption, and excess. First of all, the White House is, with or without the ballroom, I think, illustrative of excess. It's a very beautiful building that already is maybe a little excessive. But again, I think if you're hosting, if you look at some of the other places all around the world where world leaders, you know, live or invite people in, they're much larger than the White House. But the other just reality is many presidents over a long period of time have made significant changes to the White House. Significant changes to the White House. Geiger Capital sent out a couple examples on their account. Teddy Roosevelt built the West Wing. Taft made the executive office oval. FDR added the entire East Wing and included an indoor pool for himself. Truman gutted the entire White House. And I saw the pictures of that, literally gutted it. And he had to live somewhere across the street. The renovations during Truman were so massive that he couldn't even live there during that. Mm-hmm. So they gutted inside all of that. Nixon added a bowling alley. Obama added a basketball court. And I think he built that basketball court over a tennis court. And then Trump is building a ballroom. So what, again,
it's a wall. He's taking out a wall.
He's taking down a wall, reality. Like a glorified sort of awning situation. And here's my thought on this. Any Democrat that complains about it is never allowed to step foot in the ballroom. If you're one of these Democrats, and maybe you might even be a future president someday, you are hereby prohibited from using the ballroom to entertain. Absolutely not allowed. But President Trump was holding an event at the White House and the construction, you could hear it in the background. And I thought it was really funny. He commented on it.
You probably hear the beautiful sound of construction to the back. You hear that sound? Oh, that's music to my ears. I love that sound. Other people don't like it. I love it, Josh. I think when I hear that sound, it reminds me of money. In this case, it reminds me of lack of money because I'm paying for it. So it's the opposite.
Yeah. He said, guess who's paying for it? President Trump. I was like, he really is funny. But he was almost getting his jollies off of the sound of construction. He really was. I love it. Yeah, it just bums me out because I do think it's going to be a good addition. And yeah, I mean, the White House is stunning, beautiful, awesome history. Again, having just been there, totally nerded out on it. But it could use a ballroom. And isn't it a gift? They should be like, this is awesome that they are paying for an addition to the White House that presidents for generations to come will be able to use and host guests and have parties or whatever it is.
So again, he could cure cancer.
Yeah, and it wouldn't matter. He could cure cancer. It literally wouldn't matter. But that's my rule. None of the reporters who complain about it are allowed to attend any events or cover any events in the ballroom. And no Democrats who complained about it are allowed to attend. I was watching MSNBC Morning Joe, a clip from it. And Mika was like, I can't even watch it. She was like mortified, almost emotional.
Like crying. I can't even
watch it. It's so grotesque. No, it's like, you know, construction.
It's part of a wall.
That's kind of what it looks like. You know, something comes down for something else to go up and it'll be great and it'll be beautiful. And yes, it will probably be gilded in a lot of gold. And guess what? A future president will be able to change and take down some of the gold if they choose, because that's what presidents over history have done. They make changes to the White House to conform to their individual preferences, and we've allowed them to do it. All right. I hope we get an invitation to the ballroom at the White House. I would love to go.
We're not complaining at all.
No, for the record, Nicole and I aren't complaining. We love the ballroom. All right. We'll get to comments coming up next. First, if you need to save some money, I mean, we know that so many things are through the roof. Taxes just went up. Gas prices, even though the rest of the country is seeing record low gas prices, we are not in Washington State. So if you're trying to save some money in your family's budget, look at your insurance. And just, first of all, especially if you're dealing with your insurance on your own, which I did for a long time, and I would just do some quick Googling, try to figure out, what do I need? It really, none of it made sense to me. Got some insurance. Who even knows if it was the right insurance to cover my needs? Well, it doesn't have to be a guessing game. Go to First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com, and take the First Mark Challenge. We get so many emails from viewers and listeners on a weekly basis who thank us for telling them about First Mark, because now they're saving thousands of dollars a year on all sorts of different things. I mean, we've had people who are saving money on their business insurance, like Lisa. Daryl said he's a retired law enforcement officer. He ended up saving $400 over their current insurance. They've got, a fifth wheel that they're rolling around the country in. So really, First Mark is going to make sure you have the insurance to fit your needs, that you have insurance that's actually going to cover you in the event that something unthinkable happens, and they're going to make sure you have it at the very lowest price. So it really is a no-brainer, and the best part is you never pay them anything. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company, so they always have your best interest in mind. All right, some comments, and I apologize about the Daily Show poll. I did the Liz Wheeler show, which was a ton of fun. I'm a big Liz Wheeler fan. We talked about Antifa, and I was just tight on time. My bad. It's my fault. Blame me. All right, on the socialist mayoral candidate being a Nepo baby, and I give KOW actually a lot of credit for pressing her on that and pointing out, like, that this is how she presents herself.
But don't you think that
this is how she really is?
They were phrasing it as a good thing, though. They're like, oh.
I don't think so.
I read it as, I did not read any criticism towards it in their article.
I read it as critical, I guess, because they said, here's how she presents herself. But what she leaves off in that story is that she gets money from her parents. I mean, they didn't weren't as harsh on it as I would have been. But yeah.
And it's pretty wild.
I had a dream of opening a bakery. No, fine. Get a real job, though. Get a job.
And a home bakery. I don't want food you bake in your kitchen in your one-bedroom apartment that you share with your toddler. Yeah. Weird.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Matthew Cook. People like Katie and Mamdani with their ideology is twofold. They feel guilty about her. She feels guilty about her privilege, and she has absolutely no skills to get a decent job. Complete loser. Yeah, but she's going to be the mayor of one of the largest cities in America. Look how far you can get with literally no skills. And I just think about the fact.
Sling back. You've talked about this before, but at some point we've got to sling back, right?
Like, right.
Slingshot back.
I mean, it's crazy.
This is crazy.
And I don't need you to be... I'm okay with having people in elected office who are struggling, who really do understand the plight of the working class. I don't need you to be a successful business person or whatever it is. I think you can come from a variety of backgrounds in life. Had she just been kind of forthcoming, what...
I don't know. I think that if you want to run a successful city, you better be successful at life, too. You want to lead a city and down a successful path into a successful finish line where, like, you know, the end of your term.
Yeah.
Then you better be good at something.
Good at something. Yes. I'm just saying, I don't think you have to be a business magnate. I don't think you have to be President Trump. Right.
Yes.
Because you can be, like, you know, for instance, a former law enforcement officer. There's life experiences you can bring into a job that I think can make you successful in that job and to make you choose the right people around you. You know, I never like this argument that, oh, you know, you have, you know, this always comes up in the governor's race. Oh, you've never, you know, managed people. How are you supposed to manage, you know, 60,000 state employees or whatever it is? I don't believe that that's necessary only because you appoint people to run all the state agencies. And it's an issue of judgment as well. And look at Bob Ferguson. He ran the attorney general's office. He doubled it in size. And he spent all that time going after the Trump administration. So you can have managed things before, but if you did a crappy job, does it really matter that you have experience managing something? So right. My issue with her obviously is she's presenting a false facade. She absolutely is pretending to be someone that she's not. And people are totally, and then Bruce Harrell. I mean, as much as I think that he has not done as much as I hoped he would do on the crime front and the homeless front, he really does have the background that progressives should be salivating over. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, Black and Japanese and, you know, internment camps and Jim Crow laws and redlining and, you know, working class family. They should just be salivating over it. Instead, they're like, nah, I want the white chick in her 40s who's living off mommy and daddy's money and really went to Oxford. It's really crazy.
It's crazy.
Carlene.
By the way, her nonprofit, I would like to see what they're doing that's productive.
Yeah, Transit Riders Union.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
And I'm sure she never rode a bus in her life growing
up
with her parents.
She's taking a salary from it and says she works 60 hours a week at it.
I would like to make something clear.
What are you doing?
I've never ridden a bus in Seattle. So if I ever go out and campaign for something and say I'm a big fan of public transit, be like, no, yeah, no, you're not. I'm not, okay?
Well, where is she riding the bus to? Yeah. She doesn't have a job.
Yeah. Where is she riding the bus to? She doesn't have a job, and neither does her husband. Where are they going on the bus?
Where are they taking it to?
Carlene Heath. She got brainwashed at an elite school and realized she's a spoiled brat. Mm-hmm. Katrina Ferguson, no relation. That's funny. If her husband doesn't work, why can't he watch the kid?
We've all said that.
Thank you.
Yes, but it doesn't make any sense. And if
you're
she's
right.
only running her own nonprofit, you think you could maybe, you know, pick your hours. Maybe you could help manage the child's schedule between the two of you.
Why isn't he watching the kid?
Because you know what you could do? You could put that $2,200 that your parents are giving you for childcare towards an extra bedroom so the child doesn't have to sleep in yours, weirdos.
Just too much. I have way too much fun of the story. Why on Patreon? I find it funny that most of socialist politicians come from privilege and money. They have no clue as to what socialism really means or what it means to work your way up. 100%. On ICE using the city's camera system, Midnight, it's not just city installed cameras either. All Ring cameras are now part of that system. That's interesting. Mm. For that, I'd like to opt out. You should be able to opt out of people sharing your Ring
Although,
cameras.
Maybe that's how they just caught that animal abuser, and I'm okay with that.
Oh, yeah. I saw a story on that. Mm. Caught with a Ring camera.
I'll look into that. That's how they did it.
On the Edmonds teacher severing a boy's finger. Slow no-mo. You won't show the severed finger, but you'll show photos of Pramila Jayapal and Patty Murray without warning. Stop. Stop. Oh.
We usually give warning.
Leland Taylor. The teachers are so immature these days that they're essentially children themselves. Yeah. It's just insane.
I'm curious if it was a teacher or an aide or, like, how much training has this person had?
Right.
Interesting.
And are they still working there? There's a lot of questions I have.
Did they really go eat their lunch?
On the convicted felon who successfully posed as a cop, Terry Stevens. Hi, Terry. Says, so is he, if he is presenting himself as a cop, do we have to honor that? Like when a man says he's a woman. Yeah, that's what he should. That's the argument. I identify as a cop. I identify as a police officer.
Give me your drugs.
See a Seattle. Yeah, let's see a Seattle jury convict him of that. On me telling you so on the Trump 2.0 argument, Matthew says the media has been saying that about GOP candidates for decades. Remember when McCain was the most dangerous candidate? Yeah, not to the extent they are with Trump, though. I mean, you know, at least with McCain, I don't think, well, not even close. I mean, they didn't go balls to the walls on painting him as a threat to our country and all that stuff. Not even close. Left losing their mind over Trump's ballroom. Gigi says every time the White House has to entertain more than 200 people, they have to spend millions on tents on the lawn of the White House. Now it's free and taxpayers didn't pay for it. Yeah. In a sane world, people would think it's cool. In a sane world, people would be like, oh, that's awesome. You know, we don't have to pay for this huge addition to the White House. Like, great. Mm-hmm. No, but they're TDS. They've totally lost their minds. Lil Miss J.
It's really crazy. The more you think about it, the crazier it gets.
I know. But you see how they're it's like, move on to the next thing. They're just desperately saying, hey, what sticks? What sticks?
It is.
Be mad about the ballroom, you know? Be mad about whatever it is. ICE. The peace deal in the Middle East. Hamas is ruining. Oh, Trump's fault. It's like they just are trying to figure out desperately what will stick. And I think why we're going to see this early pivot to J.D. Vance and probably Marco Rubio is they have to realize by now nothing is going to stick to Trump. Nothing is going to stick to Trump. And so they might as well get a head start vilifying the next person and try it all over again and hope that something sticks to them.
It's going to be difficult because I think both J.D. and Marco, they're pretty good dudes. Good luck.
Yeah.
They don't have the history that Trump has.
Well, and also
that they're going to be able to just manipulate and squeeze nastiness out of. They're pretty good dudes.
Didn't the Marco Rubio's nomination, wasn't it confirmed by every senator or all senators but one? I think it was either 99-1 or 100. So how can they then turn around and say he's this horrible person when it was like a unanimous, yes, he's very well suited for the job of Secretary of State. So Lil Miss J, this is very nice of you. $10 super chat. Wanted to drop you some respect, Brandy, for a wonderful hair day.
Oh, for the love.
thank you so much. I thought I was having a good day, too.
Just feed the beast.
I am surprised my head fits in the door, honestly. I don't know if you guys heard, but I went to the White House. So basically best friends with Donald Trump at this point.
Basically.
Two Ladies Midwest Adventures, $10 super chat. A little late from Jenny and Julieta to you too, Nicole. Big hugs.
Oh,
okay. There you go. I don't know if that was you two about your hair or what. Ronald spins. The Democrats tank the economy, then run on affordability. I love Undivided. Yeah. And that's what they do. I mean, everything they do makes life more expensive. And then they turn around and say, I will help you survive in this environment we created. Mm-hmm. I'm really worried about Seattle under Katie Wilson. I mean, as much as I have said that Bruce Harrell has been a true disappointment, I mean, it's unfortunate that these are the things we have to choose between. But, I mean, every gain we've had in the last 4 years, which I acknowledge isn't a lot, but remember where we were 4 years ago. Deep into police defunding, acting like what was happening at CHOP was the summer of love, you know, trying to divest money from police and give it to all these woke causes, trying to decriminalize hard drugs. Mm-hmm. I mean, even 4 years ago was batshit crazy. And that's what resulted with a moderate slate being elected to the city council, and Mayor Bruce Harrell was the way more moderate option. And just like that, we're going to go right back in the other direction. Ann Davison is going to lose. The Republican Seattle City Attorney, she got smoked in the primary. She's going to lose her seat. I would be shocked if the City Council President, Sarah Nelson, very business-minded, has been a great champion for common sense. I would be shocked if she keeps her seat. And then Bruce Harrell, I don't think he's going to keep his seat either, unless this story has legs, which I doubt it does. So you'll have three of the more sane people in the city who definitely aren't going to keep their jobs. So it's going to be a bad few years ahead for sure.
Got all the sane people to leave. They've scared all the sane people out of the city.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be there. I was there yesterday for like a minute and I was like, get me out of here, because I saw an animal being treated a way that I didn't like. And I was there for 10 minutes and I was like, this is why I don't come here, because it just hurts my heart. Everything I see.
I was really annoyed. I'll just share this, not naming names or anything, but you know, I've had a lot of anger directed at me since my White House visit. Mm-hmm. And God, I have some other news to share with you after the show. Oh, I'm going to tease it with you and I'm going to tell them about it probably on Sunday's show, okay. But it's actually good news. But was that mean of me to do? Hmm. It's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. That's a tease right there.
But, you know, I got a lot of like anger directed at me. I told you, even from some family members, for even going to the White House and daring to tell a joke to the President of the United States. And I got some nasty grams from like Seattle moderates. Like, why are you kissing up to the president? Blah, blah, blah. And then Andrea Suarez, who's a good friend of the show, who does more to help with Seattle's homeless crisis than anyone, got a nasty gram from someone basically telling her that she shouldn't associate with me because it's bad for her brand. And it was me and Jonathan Cho and others. And it was like a business person. And it's like, are you kidding me? It's like, who in media has been more consistent towards supporting businesses trying to improve the city than me? And I was attacked for it for a long time, even when I was in mainstream news. But it's because I've always talked about the importance of like Amazon to our ecosystem and all these things. But because I went to the White House with Donald Trump, no, cut her out. Oh, can't have her. Yet you can cozy up to like the insane socialists, like anyone just right of center. Some of the most poisonous people to Seattle politics are the pussy moderate Democrats who are like, oh, you know, we can't say anything bad about anyone as cuckoo lefty as they are. But oh, someone even just barely right of center, it's like, shun them. I can't be seen with them. I can't be associated with them. And you think that you're doing less damage to the city than the socialists? No, you're even worse. Because you know what you're doing is wrong and you do it anyway because you don't want to fall out of favor with the progressives or be seen in a certain light. It's like, no, you should welcome everyone to the table who cares about fixing things. It's just annoying. Mm-hmm. Anyway, little rant. Yes, but some news to tell you after the show that I'll tell everybody else on Sunday. A little too soon to tell you publicly. All right. If you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, make sure to become a member of RHA today, the Rental Housing Association. RHA. Year-round, they're advocating for the rights of housing providers, and they are also down in Olympia during the legislative session doing the difficult work of going door-to-door trying to convince the Democrats not to do any more stupid stuff. And it really is, I think, a thankless job. But of course, they're working hard to try to help landlords navigate the new rent control environment and all the other new laws, restrictions, and regulations on who you can rent to, how you can rent, how much you can rent it for, and all this stuff. So if you are a small to mid-sized landlord, reach out to RHA, become a member today. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. I think an annual membership is like $260 a year, which is totally worth it. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Figured we'd end with this since we started the show by talking about the socialist Nepo babies. So of course, President Trump, you know, is from New York. I mean, I know that he kind of has gravitated toward calling Florida home, but he obviously has a special connection to New York City. So he's been asked quite a bit about what should happen in the mayoral race there. And I mean, I think that the Republicans should drop out, for the record. I know people don't want to hear that, but the polling shows that if the Republican drops out, Chris Cuomo, as much as he's a horrible option too, Chris Cuomo would at least have a chance of winning. But if the Republican doesn't drop out, then Mamdani is going to win for sure. So President Trump was asked about that race, how it's shaping up, and what he thinks.
Well, I looked at the polls, and looks like we're going to have a communist as the mayor of New York. It'll be very interesting. But here's the good news. He's got to go through the White House. Everything goes through the White House. At least this White House, it does. I don't know that I want to get involved. It's really a question of, would I rather have a Democrat or a communist? And I would rather have a Democrat than a communist.
Will you meet Mamdani if he wins?
Yeah, I'll speak to him.
But I'd rather have a Democrat than a communist. And I hope that most actual Democrats understand that is the choice. That is the choice in New York. That is the choice in Seattle. It's about a Democrat or a communist. Please, for the love of God, choose wisely. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I think I'm talking like this because Katie Wilson went to Oxford. And I'm surprised that of all the things she's faking, she didn't come back with a...
She says she doesn't know how much
English accent
gets from her parents. She couldn't come up with a number. She just gets a check randomly. Right. Doesn't know how much it's for. But that Oxford is like $30,000 to $40,000 a year. So I'm guessing it's in that range. She's still racking.
Yeah. Interesting. She said she once cut herself off from their ivory tower. Maybe it's time to cut yourself off again and make your wussy ass husband get a job, for the love of God.
Wow.
And a husband then wants to start a home bakery. It's like, you know, he ain't changing no tires. You know what I mean? He's not killing spiders for her, poor woman. I know who wears the pants in that relationship, even if they are from Goodwill. See you tomorrow.